Omaha Public Radio presents a special program on Noon Forum. We'll hear a panel discussion which took place following a screening of the film Bufor, directed by Joseph Sedar. The film, produced in Israel and nominated for a 2007 Academy Award in the Foreign Language Film category, tells the story of a 22-year-old Israeli outpost commander and his troops in the months before the country's evacuation of Lebanon in 2000. It is a powerful story, not of war, but of retreat. It is a story with no enemy, only an amorphous entity that drops bombs from the skies while terrified young soldiers must find a way to carry out their mission until their very last minutes on the Bufor mountaintop. The members of the panel include Rabbi Arye Uzrael of Temple Israel, Dr. Nasser Al-Sharif, Associate Professor of Pharmacy Sciences at the Creighton University School of Pharmacy and Health Professions, and Reverend Ernesto Medina of Omaha's Trinity Episcopal Cathedral. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday evening, May 1st, 2008, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of the Film Streams Theater, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the program is the Director of Film Streams, Rachel Jacobson.
I just really want to thank the panelists here. Of course, Rabbi Uzrael called on his friends, the very Reverend Ernesto Medina, who just moved here from Los Angeles and is at Trinity Church, I believe. So welcome. And Nasser Al-Sharif, Dr. Nasser Al-Sharif, who's a doctor here. I'm sorry, was it Creighton? Creighton, and is also a Palestinian-American, and of course, Rabbi Uzrael is an Israeli-American. So, or do you call yourselves that? So I guess you could just start by telling a little bit about your personal history and how you responded to the film because of your own experience. Do you want to start?
I'm just speechless, actually. It's I did not see the movie. This is the first time. And I think if the movie kind of give me a message, it's a very disturbing message, actually. And it's kind of it represents the status that we're in, where we have political leaderships on both sides that are somewhat putting two societies, to people in danger all the time, and this has been going on for the last 60 years. These kids that were in this fort, they were not there by choice. The occupation of Lebanon went on for 20 years, and I think this is just a very simple, sadly, sample of the violence that happened on both sides, and for them to be stuck there because of political decisions and calculations and so on. It kind of, again, for me, sadly, it kind of represents the status we're in now, where everybody's calculating every move rather than trying to look for a peace that could be doable on both sides. So I don't know. I'm just kind of, it was a very disturbing movie. I mean, and I was not expecting this. So anyway, I'll just leave it at that for now.
Father Medina?
I have to echo that sense of disturbing. It actually began right in that opening title scene. There is something that the director did that immediately set a kind of a movement that just was counter everything that I know to be true and good. That opening title scene, when the letters come out, you have this soldier that is coming out of the light and entering the darkness. And I'm just so accustomed to the opposite way. I mean, the stereotypical, you always go to the light. I think of the scripture from John's gospel, out of darkness people have seen, people enter the light, or from the prophet Isaiah, out of darkness the people have seen a great light. And throughout the film, there's the counter. There's that which makes it disturbing. Everything is moving from light into darkness, and it's just wrong. And in fact, in those final moments, when that light is that which probably could have killed them, when that flare threw up, that was the kind of that ultimate, and then the huge blast. So there were a number of recurring themes that of what we experience to be right and and correct and good and fair and just was just the film depicted all that was opposite. I mean, that which this war was, these young men, these lives that were just kind of being thrown around as dice. There was just some wrongness to it, and it was depicted with this movement from light to darkness.
It's interesting that we're having this viewing of the movie and this conversation at the end of a long day for us Jews in this town and throughout the world, which is the commemoration of the Holocaust. And then next week is the celebration of the existence of the State of Israel. And someplace in between those two polarities, I'm totally stuck. I'm stuck because this movie is all underground, and that's where I feel nothing is moving up. I am more disturbed now as if there is any hope for our two people to actually sit down and find a way to get out of the bunkers. Has been such a long living in a bunker, a mentality of a bunker, of this constant line about the four mothers that they make a reference to. Those are women. You need to know that at 12 o'clock every Friday in Jerusalem, next to the Zion Square, there are women, Palestinian women and Jewish women, all dressed in black. Those are the same women that started, four of them, having the beginning of the conversation about the occupation in Lebanon, which I think it was one of the most disastrous war activity on the part of Israel that led to nothing, to no place, to a huge retreat and embarrassment. That movie is a reflection of a generation that saw this and went to the streets to demonstrate in Israel and hugged and cried when those soldiers came back. It is an extremely disturbing movie. This is the second time I see it. I saw it, and the first time, and the second time, and the third, and the 24th time, it'll be as traumatic for me. I will never forget the first time I came to America in 1973, and I heard people speaking about high school reunions, and I looked at them as they are from a different planet, because we never had those words in Israel. Class reunion? No one wanted to come back to those reunions when half of your class is gone and dead. And this, in a way, brought up a very sharp memory for being 18, finishing high school, and because of my polio, I wasn't enlisted. And it was an embarrassment and a shock for me not to be able to serve like all the rest of my classmates. And then years later, I thank God for having polio and not being buried and not going through this futile war and existence or lack of existence that we are experiencing. Man, it is very painful.
I definitely feel like this film is a humanist film. I thought a lot about that while I was watching it, and this is also the second time I've seen it. It was really interested in the faces and the individuality of the characters, and it was right when we kind of experienced their person and their humanity that many of them were taken from us, which makes it all the more disturbing. But it didn't, it only showed that from the Israeli side. And I doubt that the filmmaker, Joseph Cedar, would, claim that the Palestinians don't experience it in a similar way. But could you speak a little bit to that, Dr. Al-Sharif?
Well, I mean, pain and suffering is on both sides, no doubt about it. I think you try to talk in this conflict who's the victim and who's being victimized. I think you have to look back at history. For me, I do believe history is very critical in this, certainly. When there is wrong, it has to be corrected. And if it cannot be corrected, then it's going to continue and violence is going to continue. From a Palestinian perspective, I think certainly the establishment of the State of Israel for the Jewish people to escape the atrocities and escape the Holocaust and the horrible things that happened was certainly something that needed to happen. But for Palestinians, they believe that it was at the expense of the Palestinians. So when you talk about celebration of the State of Israel, the 60-year celebration, for the Palestinian, it's the catastrophe. It is basically the denial of the existence of Palestinian identity. And that, for me, you know, for the Jewish people, I'm sure they understand what that means because they were subjected to what they were subjected because they didn't have somebody to protect them. And for Palestinians, I think we do feel the same way. And I think, sadly enough, whether we talk about the Arab world or the international world, I don't think anybody came to the rescue of the Palestinian people in any way to make them feel that, you know what, they have been victimized. So I think, you know, the pain and suffering, no doubt about it, is on both sides. Certainly after the war in 1948, the Palestinians did a lot of things that certainly victimized Israelis. But I think you have to go back to the existence of the State of Israel, what happened, what are the issues there, what are the rights of the Palestinians in terms of return, what are the rights in terms of a homeland, and what is that homeland, what does it look like? Because the same way that the Jewish people wrote poetry and spoke about their homeland, Palestinians sit in their refugee camps and do exactly the same thing. So how do you make that right? And how do you prevent, you know, extremists on both sides to kind of get to the point of despair, like we're seeing it happening on a daily basis? So definitely there was no discussion in terms of that pain and the suffering of the Palestinians. But I think this would be a great movie for even the Palestinians in the occupied territories to see because, sadly enough, what they know in terms of Israeli soldiers is the ones that are at the checkpoints, the ones that are shooting at them and so on, but these are little kids, young kids, that are paying, certainly, for the political calculations of people that are much bigger than they are. And sadly enough, in many cases, people that are outside Israel and outside Palestine that are making calculations that are not in the benefit of both sides. So I think, you know, the story on both sides, I think, can be told in many similar words. From a Palestinian perspective, that story has to be acknowledged from what the Palestinians believe in terms of their narrative. And up till that narrative is acknowledged, and more importantly, acknowledged by Israeli leadership. I always say that, you know, that Israel has a moral and a political and you know, a responsibility towards the Palestinians. And up till the time they acknowledge that moral responsibility, maybe something will happen.
Please. It's fine.
Can you hear? Oh, thank you. I have a question for the rabbi. A year or so ago when Israel invaded Lebanon again for the second time, there was a sign out in front of your synagogue that said, "We stand with Israel." And I'd like to point out that the second invasion was just as disastrous. It was prompted by a fairly minor incident. A soldier was kidnapped. Several other people were killed. And as a result of that, Israeli had a massive invasion. They destroyed much of the infrastructure of Lebanon. They killed roughly 1,000 civilians. Versus about 100 civilians that were killed by rockets. And so my question for you is, and the Jewish community here in Omaha is, why can't you transcend the notion of defending Israel and instead talk about a larger sort of mission, that is to peace and to international law? One can certainly recognize that Israel has the right to exist and the right to defend itself, but without a sort of opening up oneself to criticism, I don't think we're ever going to get anywhere.
Israel is not open for criticism. That sounds new to me. I think the whole world is constantly criticizing Israel. I think my community, let me talk as an individual now, because I think for the last 20 years, my community in Omaha has done everything in its power to figure out a way, at least here in Omaha, Nebraska, to get into relationship and to be able to acknowledge each other's pain. So it's complicated. It's complicated because that's the only independent Jewish state that exists after thousands of years of not having any place. In the year 70 CE, the Romans came and destroyed Jewish independence. As a result, it seems to me that you are extremely immersed in history, and so you know what was the history of the Jews. Do I think that there are no two justices that are in clash here in the land of Israel, in Palestine or the state of Israel? I totally acknowledge. Nasser and I have been talking for the last 20 years about this. Our pain is bleeding outside already. If it was up to the two of us, we can finish it in 5 minutes, believe me. But there are politicians and the politicians that represent my people or the politicians that represent your people have made many, many mistakes. And the politicians, by the way, that were leading this country. So there is enough blame to share and to spread around. The Jews in America, there is a lot of dirty laundry that we wash, but we wash it inside. We wash it indoor. There is a difficult sometimes for some of us to publicly, similar to the difficulty that some Muslim leaders have about coming publicly. My people, my congregation knows exactly where I stand. If you didn't know until now, and some of you are here, I definitely don't support the hawkish policies and the brutality that sometimes is expressed in the way Israel is trying to run and succeed and survive. But at the same time, there is such a pain. It's hard to contain so many thousands of years in a little small pill that you swallow and you feel good in the morning. I also acknowledge, and I definitely have learned a lot from our relationship about the pain and the sadness and the suffering of the Palestinian people. We need to continue talking. We need to continue pointing out. We need actually 1,000 Jewish mothers and 1,000 Palestinian mothers to march on Jerusalem, into Lebanon, Beirut, into Cairo, into Damascus, and finish this. As long as we have some men that are trying to figure out what to do and they are stuck in their bunkers, and nothing will happen.
It seems to me that one of the universal aspects of this film, and Esther, you alluded to it, is that we so easily want to put things into one or the other. And one of the things that made this particular film, one of the things that the film made clear was the complexity of the enemy. I mean, there were not two entities against each other, but I mean, just the government, the bombers, the military, the self-conscious of each soldier. I mean, there were just a multitude, and we could just continue to add on to it. And one of the things, in particular, in this country, we want to see things as here or there instead of the myriad of forces and enemies that put us into that place of of war. I mean, that somehow we have justification that we can prepare to die in order to live. And so I think about that image of the bomb squad soldier who, you know, they prepared him in this kind of ritual to die. The dog went out to prepare to die, and we can choose another way. We can choose to prepare to live to have life, rather to prepare to die to have life. I mean, there's that one kind of essence of hope, you know, when the father says, you know, when one life is gone, you know, how important is life? When one is gone, everything collapses. And there was the truth moment, and that we forgot the sanctity of one life in just getting worried about the complexities of the enemies, or trying to simplify the complexity of the enemies. We forgot about the sanctity of life.
I would speak to two points. First of all, I think when we deal with these complex issues, we need to take a long, many, multi-generational view. The mistakes of this generation, or this country or that country, or vis-a-vis the movie, need to be seen also in the need to survive generations, be it Palestinian or Israeli. And you look long term and you say, what's happening? You can say it would be, and it would be, if the mothers could march to Lebanon, but in the movie, the roads are mined. So you can say it shouldn't be, couldn't be, and we just, but they were mined. There are dangers out there, and survival is a multi-generational view, I believe, or should be. And thirdly is that we see lingering still the attempts of international intervention to, but I would just point you to Darfur, which is literally being talked to death. And with a lot of well intentions and stuff like that, they don't have a champion to put a stop to it. And so I would just make those comments. Survival is something, a responsibility of survival of the people, however that in its minimal or maximal view comes out, is an important issue, and it is multi-generational. And you can make mistakes, but are you making some progress, or are you keeping the ship afloat?
Well, I guess I'll. I don't know if I'm going to address specifically what you talked about. I think with any conflict, there are basics that you have to address. I think mistakes do happen on both sides, but I think you have to accept what is minimum for both sides. From a Palestinian perspective, I think when you talk about the international community, for us, you know, the state of Israel came into existence because of an international vote. So I heard something in terms of, you know, the state of Israel with a vote became a state. It could be easily done that a state of Palestine become a state with identified borders as a state. And things become much easier. And that state is already well-defined by the international community. So international law has to be applied all the time. It cannot be, you know, chosen that we want to go to war against Saddam Hussein for 16 resolutions against him. We go to war. There is resolutions that say these are occupied territories. East Jerusalem is occupied. Settlements are illegal. They're not realities on the ground, and so on. So we cannot play games with these things, you know. So if we stick with what is international law, what are the facts that should be addressed so that a reasonable solution, our president keeps talking about a viable Palestinian state. You cannot have a viable Palestinian state if you have 400,000 Israeli settlers living among Palestinians in Palestinian land. You cannot have Jewish-only roads in Palestinian areas. So these things are no way going to make it happen. But even the international will, or our president, makes it happen not by a fiasco in Annapolis and nothing happens afterwards, then international law doesn't mean anything. You know, and then those generations are more and more disappointed on both sides because we give hope and there is no hope. On the contrary, it's just a fiasco and it's a charade. And sadly, more people become radicalized, more people become violent because nothing happens. So I think you have to start with some basics. And for me, I think international law, human rights standards are very important in terms of how can we address this. The borders are already identified. Let's just do it.
It's a little bit hard to sit on a negotiation table. When a decision was made, for example, to withdraw from the Gaza Strip, there was this euphoria in the air that once Israel moves away from Gaza, things are going to be quiet. On the contrary, it's not quiet on the Israeli side, and it's definitely not quiet in the Palestinian side. The tension, the Scud missiles, the checkpoints, and I admit that those checkpoints are inhumane, but those checkpoints are a way to allow to afford some kind of a living condition for the Jews that live inside of Israel. All kind of maps have been drawn in the last 60 years. Lots of maps leading to no solution, no peace, no compromise. It's a terrible neighborhood. Terrible neighborhood. We're there. We still need to find ways to ease the stress, the difficulties, the pain on both sides. But at the same time, I'm looking at how to allow my parents who live in Tel Aviv to continue living in a country that they immigrated from Bulgaria a few months after the state was established. What about their lives? What about the lives of Palestinians across the way that used to live in the land in Palestine, and they still carry some of them the keys to their homes? There is enormous amount of injustice in that place of the world. Those conversations, by the way, take place there too. I'm part of that generation that after the Six-Day War, I finished high school. Actually, maybe that's why they graduated me, because of the war. No one paid attention then to grades and and anything else. But I remember with a group of us in Tel Aviv University, Jewish guys, 18, 19, 20 years old, marching in Jerusalem with empty caskets in front of the Prime Minister's house, suggesting that maybe this is a good time. And I still believe deeply that the Six-Day War and the results of the Six-Day War were completely misused by the international community and by the parties that were fighting. There was a chance there to be able to ask and offer compromise. Forgiveness is not being offered generously in the Middle East. And so as a result, everyone is stuck. This movie, every word in the movie is, I heard it in the past, every word of every soldier, of every commander, of every politician. And I think that we need to find some kind of a courage, some kind of a belief that this need to be solidified by not only words, by actions on both sides of stopping the killing, stopping the suicide bombing, at the same time allowing for people to return to some kind of a normal life What is normal life? I don't know what normal life is in the Middle East anymore. I don't think I had a normal life when I was growing up there. I don't think Nasser has a normal life since then. This is something that is really tormenting both of us. This is why we are working so hard to try to figure out in Omaha, Nebraska, how three different religions, Christianity, Islam, and Judaism, can find a way here in Omaha to create a model that maybe there will be some kind of a ripple effect around the world. Maybe, inshallah, you know, we all pray for those kind of moments.
I'm struck with your comments about how bleak the film was, which I felt too, but I also was very struck that both of the fact that it's as a film in Hebrew made in Israel, which apparently was very, very popular according to the promotional material, that there was an openness of people to experience the deep humanity of these individual people, the futility of this conflict. I'm also struck that both the filmmaker and all of the people portrayed were very young. And despite the fact that there's this huge impasse, I wonder, having kind of hit bottom, a younger generation than us, the appeal of a film like this is it resonates with people like this can't go on because there's just no way out. But that having hit bottom is a different place, perhaps, I don't know, than for us who are a little older of a generation. I don't know how to think about that, except that I'm struck that they're young, the filmmaker is young, and they're saying no in a really profound way. And that apparently the response was no. Is there any comment about that?
This is only one of few Israeli movies on the same subject. I mean, hopefully we'll have a chance to see more of those kind of movies. This is the mood of the young generation, except they are locked in this unbelievable dance that they repeat all the time with some of the older generation politicians that are also trying very hard to protect and defend and secure the life of the young people. There are demonstrations on the streets of Tel Aviv regularly. When the big demonstration when Yitzhak Rabin was alive and that caused actually his death, those kind of activities and this kind of a mood exist on a weekly basis on the streets of Israel. It does not materialize when it comes to some of the conversations in the Israeli parliament. Maybe Nasser can speak about what happens on a Palestinian street.
Well, yeah, unfortunately, in terms of the media and the portrayal of Palestinians in terms of peaceful demonstrations or even working with Israelis side to side for peace, is non-existence in this country, but in fact it does happen on a daily basis, and I think there are more of these actions on a daily basis than any throwing of rocks or sadly what happens from Gaza in terms of firing rockets. So there is hope, but I think, again, I go back to the reality on the ground, and I think the reality on the ground, and I'm going to be biased here as a Palestinian, for the Palestinians it has not changed one bit. It is worse. We have leadership in this country that makes it even a lot more worse. We have a president that sat for 8 years doing nothing, and then he gave us a charade, and it's going to make it even more violent. He brought us this whole issue about democracy. The Palestinians go ahead and do their election. Hamas wins because Hamas thought that the Oslo Accords between 1993 to 2000 did not bring the Palestinians any hope, which is the key. I think there has to be hope on both sides. I think the whole issue of security for Israel is wrong. I think it is hope for everybody is what is needed there. We concentrate on security, and then becomes the issue of how strong Israel and how much money we give Israel, rather than how can we give hope for both sides so both sides can feel that there is a chance to coexist. So for Palestinians, when they see from 1993, and there was hope. I think I was there in 1995, and people were excited. People were working hard to make it happen. But when you end up between 1993, starting with barely 20,000 settlers inside what was supposed to be the viable Palestinian state, we end up with 400,000. And then supposedly the negotiation was going to give East Jerusalem to the Palestinians, and we end up with another 150,000 Israelis living there. That does not help. That does not help. So, again, the reality on the ground has to be changed by actions. And, yes, there has been actions by the Palestinians. And you could talk about who's reacting to who, but the reality on the ground sadly dictates the violence. There is movies, there is a beautiful theater between Palestinians and Israelis, and it goes on a daily basis, but it does not impact the political process that is happening because the leadership is not really fulfilling their duties. And sadly enough, we get also our leadership playing a completely different game. Now we have terrorism, and we have this whole war on terrorism, and sadly that plays a role whether we like it or not, and I think a lot of the policies that we have negatively impacts what happens in Palestine and Israel because of how we perceive this war on terrorism rather than trying to make this a just solution for both sides with hope for both sides. I don't think security is the issue. Israel can take on anybody in the Arab world, including Iran. So it should be hope for both sides, I think.
I can tell you a conversation with my parents that took place 2 days ago. The Iranian piece is absolutely scary for my parents. We all are realizing that just having a territory will not defend any country anymore.
Sure.
With long missiles and all kind of biological warfare. My parents, for the first time 2 days ago, actually, my parents who don't have a very close relationship to God, my father said to me, I am so thankful to God that you and your sister are not in Israel. When I try to investigate and try to figure out what exactly he means by this, because this was the first time he said this to me. He described the fear, the darkness that is at this moment just enveloping that region about what can happen. Actually, Nasser was pretty kind to President Bush. Please don't ask me about how I feel about the policies of the United States in the Middle East. I will have to resign from my pulpit first. No? And then Rabbi Linder can continue.
No.
I see a lot about this conflict that you can see in microcosms and relationships, and I think that that's true of all of these kind of political situations. And, you know, the film really showed the absurdity of war and the true absurdity of a holy war, because it's so oxymoronic. It seems just ridiculous, because how do you reconcile faith with violence and with ending lives and with the sanctity of life? Could you speak to that a little bit, Father Radin?
Yeah, it just seems to me, I mean that's the lie about it, right? That there might actually be a holy war when in fact it's not holy at all. That's there's political, economic, you know, whoever's the biggest and strongest is going to win. And then we're just going to tell the people it's about God. That the cry that the religious community needs to be shouting out is that there is an option of peace, there is an option of justice. There,
you know, if there was this word that, you know, what was the most commonly used word up here was the word deserve. You know, if we were willing to ask, what do people deserve? And it goes into what you were sharing, Nasser. I mean, it's about, you know, what people deserve on one side is what people deserve on the other side. That's a holy addressing a situation. It's the fact that we've lost the holiness of it that's the problem. It's just wrong. I mean, the good news is that God is present on both sides. Because I can't imagine God not being present, because that's just beyond imagination, that the only hope is that God is simply present.
Do you two feel like in Israel, people on both sides of the conflict, that the majority of people who are pro-war and pro-violence are pro-war because of religious reasons or because of political reasons?
This is a conversation that we have been having for 20 years. I don't think it has to do anything with religion. I think it's all political. I think we definitely proved in the conversation and talking about religion, all three of us, in different circles, mm-hmm. that actually the religion is what brings us together. Nasser, in the movie, asked me, oh, wait a minute, this word is actually in Arabic too, yeah, that we have so much in common. I think Judaism and Islam and Christianity have so much in common. I don't think that, I think it's easy always, all the time, to identify religion as the core for all the problems in the world. I don't think so. I don't think religion is the issue here. It's all the things that Father Medina mentioned, but not a religion.
I agree 100%, and I would add also is that part of the world now has come really the somewhat the platform for the fight of the one only superpower in the world in terms of how she sees the world. I think we have polarized that side, part of the world. I think the whole issue of who are the axis of evil now in terms of looking at Iran, Hezbollah, or Hamas and so on in that part of the world does not help. I think certainly it makes rabbis, dad and mom more anxious because we're polarizing. Is there a different way with dealing people that disagree with us? It's like after 9/11, the message that was sent to the world is you're either with us or against us. I think it's the worst message we could have sent to the world. Or the other message, we're going to go out and smoke them out. Well, if you're sensitized to the history of this country and what the Native American people suffered in this country, our president wouldn't have uttered this because you're trying to correct something and then you're saying you're going to smoke them out like we smoke the Native Americans of this country. I mean, not even a concept of what the history of this country is all about. So I think we could have given a different message. I think this whole issue of the new doctrine and polarizing the world and looking at, you know, no international law, no United, I mean, with the gentleman, what he said. I mean, this administration have lived on ignoring United Nations resolution when it doesn't serve its purpose. But when it does, let's reunite all of our, you know, all of us around the United Nations to do something, well, twice in Iraq, I guess. It just has not been helpful. I think there are enough people on both sides in Palestine and Israel to make this happen. But I think there is so much interference, and especially with this administration, what they've done, that is making it so difficult by polarizing people and polarizing major powers in that part of the world that it makes it even more difficult for Israel to even think that, you know, I could make peace with Syria. So sadly enough, we're not helping.
I know we're talking a lot about political decisions, and we talk also about religion, and you have a tendency to think about it's more political than religious, but let's imagine 1 minute that Israel has no official religion. Don't you think it's going to soften the borders?
Well, you know what? There are people on both sides that do believe in one state, one vote for everybody, and there is discussion about that. Is it going to happen now? Definitely not. I think Israel, certainly in terms of its Jewish identity, that is very important now. But again, going back to the hope, if there is hope, I think I could foresee Israel as a democracy allowing, you know, the existence of a one state with one vote for everybody. Is it possible now? Definitely not. No, I think there's just so much polarization. But there is, like I said, discussion about a one-state solution rather than a two-state, because the two-state is non-existent now. Even with Mahmoud Abbas coming here 100 million times or meeting with Omar 100 million times, I don't think the two-state solution is possible at this stage. I think it's a charade, and up till some solid kind of measures happen on the ground and the international community comes in with the United Nations resolutions and borders and so on, refugees and those issues dealt with in a very kind of charismatic manner, it's not going to happen. I mean, I'm sorry, I'm not being optimistic whatsoever about these negotiations. I had hope when he brought him to Annapolis, but after that I knew it's a failure. And it's not because of Hamas, and I'm not a supporter of Hamas. That's a whole completely different part of the equation that can be discussed separately. But I don't think it's Hamas the reason for why this is not happening. But that's my biased opinion, I guess.
It's hard for me to imagine one vote, one person, if also part of the solution is bringing Palestinian refugees back. The numbers just don't work. I don't even imagine after 4,000 years of the Jewish religion of 5,000 years that suddenly Judaism will disappear into a non-religious democracy. It's not going to happen. Other solutions need to be found. I'm only a rabbi. I do a lot of praying. All of us do a lot of praying. We try to do things here. I deeply believe that when things are done here, things also change up there. And I think that some kind of a... if you remember the story of Exodus, it took 430 years for the Israelites in Egypt to cry out, and only then God heard him, God remembered them. Excuse me, where was God in those 430 years? He knew where they are. He knows everything. I think that it has to be a cry, a tearing of clothes, the cry of mothers and brothers and fathers and children to reach to heaven, for heaven to also be a part of this solution.
I'm wondering, Rabbi, if I'm less religious than you.
Wow, because that's an interesting confession.
Because it seems to me that it is what we do here that could possibly actually impact Israel-Palestine, different direction. I mean, one of the things that I, as a person born in this country, I mean, am just having to constantly question is what are we doing in the United States? We too easily enter into the voyeur state. We too easily enter the let's go with the strong side rather than trying to be imaginative and remembering our very roots. I mean, those kind of just cliche justice for all created equally. It seems to me that this country might take the lead in acting differently against the tide, against what is the conventional wisdom, and actually take its be a steward of the prophetic gift that we've been given, and actually proclaim God's presence in not only in the Holy Land, but in the world. I mean, just name it. So what we do here has impact there.
You know, there was a scene in the movie of washing the blood on the floor. There is washing of blood on all sides, but this is not water. Those are just tears. and they come flowing from inside of us, those of us who have been part of this tragedy that can never be stopped inside of us. And we try constantly to find ways to express our sadness, our pain, our anguish. And I thank you, Rachel, for allowing us to have this opportunity.
Thank you so much, Rabbi. Rabbi has had a tremendous hand in shaping my own spiritual and moral values. So it's such an honor to be working with you on this, and it's such a pleasure to meet you both. I'm really happy to have you both here, and thank you so much. I hope you'll come back sometime.
You've been listening to a special program on Noon Forum. We've heard a panel discussion which followed a screening of the 2007 Israeli film Bufor at Omaha's Film Streams Theater. The members of the panel included Rabbi Aryeh Azriel of Temple Israel, Dr. Nasser Al-Sharif, Associate Professor of Pharmacy Sciences at the Creighton University School of Pharmacy and Health Professions, and Reverend Ernesto Medina of Omaha's Trinity Episcopal Cathedral. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday evening, May 1st, 2008, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Rachel Jacobson, Casey Logan, and Jim Foyt of Film Streams for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.